Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Joshua Hill has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like Joshua. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, January 4th, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From Baker Mayfield country, I'm Len Peralta.
And I am from just a hot corner of L.A. County. I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
The hot corner.
Hot as in happening? Or?
As in third base. He plays third base for Los Angeles.
It's happening. It's also a little bit warmer today than it was yesterday. A little.
Len Peralta is back after a holiday break. If you listen to Good Day Internet, the extended version of the show for patrons, you heard about his Merry Texmas. And Len, we're very, very excited to have you draw your first art for the show for 2019.
You know, it's always always great to be able to draw the first show of the year because usually it's about CES. So
today we are going to talk about what we expect to see at CES, but let's start.
Probably not a lot of CSS.
No, probably not.
I mean, not unless you view source. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Marriott says that it now believes fewer than 383 million unique guest records were accessed by attackers in the Starwood data breach. Now, that still sounds like a lot, but it's down from the original estimate of 500 million. Marriott also revealed that 5 million unencrypted passport numbers were accessed, along with 29 million encrypted passport numbers. Marriott also confirmed it phased out Starwood's database and now itself runs all its booking through the Marriott database that wasn't affected by the breach.
In the next Windows update scheduled for April, Microsoft will remove Cortana's voice walkthroughs for clean installs of Windows 10 Pro, Enterprise, and Education editions. You can still launch Cortana during setup if you miss her. You just got to press Win, Control, Enter, and Cortana will remain active during setup by default in Windows 10 Home. So there's no getting away from her if you're installing Windows 10 Home. Let's talk a little bit more about Huawei.
Let's do it. Reuters and Bloomberg both report seeing an internal memo from Huawei's corporate senior vice president, Chen Lifang, regarding a New Year's tweet that was sent by Huawei's official account. This is a Twitter tweet that was posted from an iPhone. And it says it right at the bottom. Lifang wrote that the tweet caused damage to the brand. Two employees will be demoted and have pay cut by 500 won, which is about 728 US dollars.
Yeah.
5,000 rather. And one will see their pay rank frozen for 12 months. Yikes. Apparently a problem with VPN on a PC led the employees to using an iPhone with a foreign SIM card as a workaround. Now, Twitter is blocked in China and the tweet itself was really innocuous. It was
Happy New Year
from all of us at Huawei type thing. But wow, this is a lot different than maybe a corporate apology that you might see from another company.
Well, we've been seeing more stories like this where someone says, hey, did you notice that so-and-so tweeted, you know, from this kind of platform when they endorsed this other kind of platform? And Twitter has made it more visible. It's always been there if you wanted to find it, but they've put it front and center in some recent redesigns, so it's a lot more visible, which is I guess why Huawei is very upset by this. It is interesting though that the Chinese firewall blocks Twitter, and so to post from the corporate Huawei account, they had to get around the Chinese firewall, which is not necessarily illegal. Corporations are allowed to have VPNs under certain rules, so they weren't necessarily breaking the law by doing this, but because their official VPN provider was down, I don't know if it's illegal for them to go with a foreign SIM card like that, but they tried to say, well, gosh, we got to get our Happy New Year tweet out there, and took some shortcuts without considering that people would be able to tell they were using an iPhone.
Yeah, and to have your pay docked for 12 months because you're trying to say Happy New Year and do good by the Huawei official Twitter account. Kind of a bummer.
Los Angeles city attorney has filed a lawsuit against IBM's The Weather Company, claiming its Weather Channel app uses personal data for targeted marketing and hedge fund analysis. Now, keep in mind, The Weather Channel is also a television channel. The Weather Channel app used to be connected to that, but it's now owned by The Weather Company, which is owned by IBM, which is separate from The Weather Channel. It's branding that gets very confusing, but this is an IBM issue, not a Weather Channel television issue. The app uses location to deliver your weather forecasts. Of course it does. That's what you want. You want it to be able to tell where you are so it can say, oh, in your neighborhood, it's going to rain. The suit claims that IBM affiliates and other third parties receive the data and IBM does not properly disclose this. IBM says, no, we do disclose it appropriately and we will vigorously defend ourselves in court. My guess is what's going on here is IBM is, or the Weather Channel app, is one of these apps that when it asks for location information, the little pop-up just says, hey, we want to give you forecasts in your area. Can we track your location? And you say, well, yeah, I want that. Whereas the terms of service that you have just clicked agree without reading and you haven't dug down in to find when it asks for location information probably do disclose that, hey, we'll also be giving this to a bunch of third parties, but it'll be anonymous, we promise.
Well, yeah, that scenario was probably exactly what's going on. And it probably, again, is information that if it is anonymous, well, it's not going to affect you all that much. But it's that, do you read the terms of service a lot more closely? Or does IBM or the weather company in this case need to make this much more clear when it asks for your location?
Yeah, and we've talked about this kind of thing a lot on DTNS where what these companies are doing isn't necessarily nefarious. They're not trying to sell you. What they're trying to do is say, hey, we know a lot of people are checking the weather, are concerned about the weather in this area. And we also, because we're collating that data, know that people who are checking the weather in that area also are buying rain boots. And so we can sell that data to the rain boot manufacturer to target their ads toward this area. It never involves particular people in the practice, and that's why these companies do it so much. But the attitude about this sort of thing has changed, and there's more scrutiny on it. So even if you're following the letter of the rules by disclosing, it may not be enough in the court of public opinion anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of that ad manipulation conversation where, yeah, if I feel manipulated somehow into buying rain boots because of what happened in this case, okay, some people are going to say, yeah, I don't want that. I want to be more in charge of this. But at the supermarket, that's also why certain products are put next to each other on shelves. So
It's not the first app to do this. It's not even the first weather app to do it. But I think because it has IBM connected to it, it's getting a lot more play.
Anonymous actors, not Hollywood actors, the different kind, publish on Twitter hundreds of documents of German politicians, celebrities, and journalists, including financial information, addresses, personal letters, copies of identity cards, and others. It's unclear if the information was leaked or obtained through a breach or by phishing. Members of all political parties except the AfD were affected. German Chancellor Angela Merkel was among the victims through documents related to her that were not considered sensitive. German cyber defense body BSI met to coordinate federal agencies' response.
Yeah, this is both a huge deal and not at the same time. I mean, having people's identity cards published is basically a huge doxing of large numbers of the German government and celebrities and journalists. I'm not in any way defending it or saying it's a good thing. It also does not seem to be, in most cases, with some of those financial information maybe, the kind of harmful data breach that could really, really disrupt someone's life. But it ain't good at all. And of course, the finger pointing is going on with the usual suspects, Russia, China, etc., all being bandied about. But the fact is, nobody knows who did this. Nobody knows how they did it yet. And I think that's really interesting. It could have been a single leaker. It might not even be a typical data breach. It might not be an attack at all. It might be that some disgruntled employee had access to large databases of information and leaked them out because they were upset. You know, it's interesting that one particular political party was unaffected. That doesn't, you know, mean that they're guilty of it, but it could mean that someone either associated with that party or in support of that party wanted to get back at political enemies. It doesn't mean that that happened either, but that's another possibility.
Yeah, the German chancellor having personal stuff. It's again, Merkel, no one is safe.
It was only like her actual email address and one other, you know, fairly quasi public thing. She didn't have any sensitive data, thankfully for her.
It does seem more disgruntled than anything, just because the data itself is not that juicy.
Yeah, for the most part, it's bulk over juiciness, I guess. You know, I mean, there's some, not to say there isn't some juicy data in here for sure, and people will be plowing through it trying to find it, but it's more about the just sheer amount of it, I think. Amazon has launched a visual design tool called Amazon Showroom that lets you place virtual furniture in a virtual living room, customize the design, and then presumably Amazon will hope that you buy that furniture from Amazon. They make it really easy to add it to your cart. Amazon launched an augmented reality feature in 2017 that lets you place potential furniture in your camera view. So you could actually place it in your own home, which I actually think is more useful because otherwise I've got to try to recreate my room. And every time I've tried to use one of these things, I always go, well, wait a minute. I have a lot of weird things in my room that I'm not going to move. And now I have to recreate those, and I maybe have some weird angle, especially in my old house. I had these weird angles that I took a lot of time to replicate in these things. So it seems better to just use augmented reality to me.
Well, I think both of these tools are good in really different ways. So I moved somewhat recently. I used the augmented reality tool to figure out where my stuff that I already had might look in the room. That was actually super helpful, and also stuff that I was going to need to buy or maybe things that weren't going to fit. But the whole virtual reality room, even though it might not resemble any room that you're going to redesign, at least kind of starts you from scratch. If you want a, you know, a color palette, and does that rug look good to that chair in a, it, you know, in a room with four walls with a window somewhere, I can see where maybe that would get you going at the beginning. And then you use the AR app to be a little bit more realistic about how it would look in your own house. I love this kind of stuff. And Amazon's not the first company to do it, but they now have a couple of their own lines of Amazon branded furniture. So I can see why tools like this are only going to help sell big items.
I want the tool that lets me just scan my room and then creates a virtual environment for me based on it. I think that's the best of both worlds, because then I don't have to stand there looking in my room. I agree that that's a little clunky, but I also don't have to spend a lot of time setting it up to work for my room. If it could just scan it, and I'd be able to be like, okay, put all the furniture I have in here in the room. Then I can delete the stuff I want to replace and try stuff out then. That's what I want. Go make that, somebody. Wayfair, Home Depot.
But how is it going to... Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I want that too.
Well, yeah, I didn't say it was easy. I just said I want it.
Yeah. Yeah, how are you going to delete that one chair without deleting both of the
chairs? There's some good machine learning out there that would be able to recognize individual furniture elements and be able to delete
them.
True.
Yeah, so, based on maybe how far away they are from the camera and that sort of thing.
But
there's
got to
be an interior designer listening right now saying, I have the tool. So let us know.
Yeah, feedback, please. And we'll beta test it. Promise.
Evan Blass is a very reliable leaker of images of products to come. Ev leaks on Twitter early, but Evan Blass says that he cannot speak to the authenticity of the latest leak that he shared. So consider this a solid rumor. The video that he leaked shows a phone that folds out three ways into a tablet, allegedly from Xiaomi, which is expected to have a foldable device in the works. So that would make sense. Samsung and Royal have both showed foldable prototypes of their own. Lenovo said it was working on one back in 2016. So one would think it's about time. And patent applications suggest that Apple is working on the concept as well. Authentic or not, Let's go back to the age-old question. Do we want foldable phones?
Yeah, because none of these work the same way. Even the
version of a foldable phone.
This video, whether it's Xiaomi or something else, or maybe it's a deep fake, I don't know, but it shows three ways, right? It's a thick phone that unfolds into a tablet. And of course, we saw the Samsung one that is just a thick tablet that folds in half. I guess it's a thinner tablet, but it folds in half into a thick phone. None of these seem to work the same way. Nobody's hit on the foldable thing that everybody wants to copy yet. So it's early days for this. It feels like we're in the Palm Trio era of foldable phones. Nobody's quite figured out what a smartphone should look like, and we're waiting on the Apple iPhone to come along and create the template that everybody imitates. Or do we care? Is this going to be like the UMPC where it just never catches on?
It's so hard for me to think of what a foldable phone would look like that doesn't just harken back to the days when phones were all foldable. I love the idea of protecting my screen, but it also would come with some extra phone parts that I don't necessarily need. However, if those extra parts are able to be disengaged or turn into a keypad and then it's more of a tablet, I don't know. It's like, yeah, one of these concepts that I have to see it first in order to say, oh yeah, now I need this.
It's to me, the big advantage, the big attraction is a tablet. Being able to have a tablet and fold it up and it be a phone. My problem is none of the form factors I've seen look like the kind of phone I would want to have. They're pretty seamless on the tablet side, all of them, by the looks of it. But when they fold into a phone, they don't seem like the kind of phone I'd want to carry around. I want to carry around a phone that feels like a modern phone and then somehow have it unfold into a tablet. I don't know if it's unfoldable. I think it's like flexible, like a screen you pull out, like a curtain, right? Roger, what do you think?
Well, I think this is the stage where everyone throws something up against the wall to see what sticks. Remember, you know, the grand old days of the PDA and before they had connectivity, everyone's figuring out, how do you interface with it? You have a little keyboard, so it's a little clamshell computer, and you've went through so many different iterations. You basically went through 5 years before someone hit on the idea, Palm, you just use a stylus. And then we went to the smartphone. Well, if you use a PDA this way, obviously you're going to use a phone the same way. And it took another 5 or 6 years till Apple's iPhone rolled out and just, no, it's all touch. It's all touch. And I think we're still in that phase where everyone's just trying to feel everything out to feel what works best. Right now, if this was an actual product, it'd still be pretty clunky, what you were saying, Tom. And I think no one has really hit on the eureka moment where you can say, okay, of course this is how it's supposed to work.
Yeah. Well, we are definitely going to see some foldable phones and other foldable screen items at CES. So let's get to talking about it. If you want to get the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. It's the way to keep up to date in a fast manner every day with tech, dailytechheadlines.com. So what to expect at CES? We'll just go through all of the categories that we expect to hit. It's always fun to do this and then check back in a week and find out how close we were. Foldable is definitely one of them, but 5G, I think, will be probably one of the biggest. 5G in your home, 5G in your phone, 5G in your car. In fact, if you want a more of a deep dive on 5G, my editor's desk at patreon.com/DTNS is an explanation of 5G. My attempt to explain what 5G is and what it's good for. You can get that at the associate producer level or above at patreon.com/DTNS. But yeah, Sarah, I think we're going to be hearing 5G, 5G, 5G a lot.
Well, and CES is the right place for it because you see a lot of products at CES. And when you say, well, but hold on to who's manning the booth, but isn't that not available yet? Well, but when it is available, we'll be the first company to have launched this 5G microwave.
This 5G pizza maker. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you're going to want.
Well, that's the thing. There will be some actual real devices that will be like, oh, this laptop will have, you know, standard 5G NR in it. So when that service becomes widely available, you'll be ready for it. absolutely going to see those. There's also going to be crazy stuff where like, really, why would you need 5G? And then there's going to be, what I'm most interested in is the stuff that you wouldn't think needs 5G because it's not about speed, but needs 5G because it's about capacity. Because now you can have so many more things connecting at once because of 5G's increased capacity. That's kind of the area I want to keep an eye on for CES.
Well, I think that a lot of hardware companies are going to lean into that as well, because you see a lot of hardware products at CES that you don't need. They're cool, but you don't need them. But if hardware companies can convince us of how much all of these smart devices are going to talk to each other much better because of 5G. See, 5G is what we've all been waiting for. Then they're going to sell more product.
We'll hear AI and smart home. Expect to see it in almost every product. Expect to see AI in almost every product. Some of them may actually even use it. Voice assistant battle is going to carry on. Google and Amazon. We saw a lot of Google Assistant last year. I have a feeling we're going to see more Amazon voice services this year because there are now more than 20,000 smart devices compatible with Amazon, and more than 10,000 that work with Google Assistant. So this is the year, you know, there was Amazon and everything 2 years ago. Google sort of won the headline battle last year. And I think this is the year they're going to go head to head. We're just going to see a lot of voice assistant in everything. And alongside with, this is got machine learning, some of which will be stupid and not true. And others might be pretty interesting and innovative.
Yeah, considering how much attention Google Assistant got at CES last year, it just goes to show how well Amazon has done in this space. And sure, they had a head start, but 20,000 to 10,000 means they're not exactly neck and neck. The Amazon ecosystem is still firmly ahead of the pack, including Google.
Yeah, the other thing I think we're going to see a lot of is wearables, particularly around health tech. So not just Fitbit type trackers or smartwatches, and we'll see plenty of those, but actual health tech that you can wear, you know, and the things we hear about most often are for diabetics, you know, to monitor your insulin levels. But I think we'll also have a lot more heart monitors and specialized items for special conditions. About 120 health tech exhibitors are going to be at the show this year, according to Lauren Good at Wired. That's up from 98 last year. And we're going to see a lot of health stuff from the unusual.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Right now on a special edition of Tools and Weapons, Brad Smith is sharing a vision for what Microsoft calls the new AI economy. It's an idea rooted in technological revolutions of the past, like the printing press, which created a vibrant marketplace of related innovations, ultimately leading to an explosion of books and readers. But he doesn't just give a history lesson. In the episode, Brad lays out the tangible ways that Microsoft is providing infrastructure and other support to those leading the charge of the new AI economy. And he explains the importance of using that infrastructure to ensure equitable access to AI to people all over the world. To stay current on insights from voices at the center of the conversation on AI, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you like to listen.
Suspects. Procter & Gamble is going to be showing off a ton of different health tech items there. We've seen L'Oreal before, but we're gonna see some L'Oreal based health tech stuff as well. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, the manufacturers aside, these are silly as they sound. I read Lauren's article as well, and I guess Olay is going to have some sort of skin tech that can tell you something about that. Those are the sorts of innovations that I go, okay, so I don't have to just now all of a sudden start caring about how many steps I take per day. I already care about washing my face. This is the sort of thing that I can incorporate into my life potentially in a way that actually matters to me. Skin and hair and things like that. So bring it on.
Bring it. Pantene, smart Pantene. Is not a joke. That is a thing we're going to see.
I know, but I'm like, well, I wash my hair regularly. Yep. I'm never going to stop doing that. Let's see what you got, Pantene.
CarTech, we see Wednesday's show for more about this with Tim Stevens. We talked a little bit about it, but we're going to, self-driving to smart car and scooters. We're going to see a lot of that as well.
CarTech is always something that I mean to get to at CES. And then my feet start hurting and I run out of room because it's kind of down on the end.
Yeah.
And the Detroit Auto Show is the bigger car tech show. However, I hope we can make it over there this year and spend a little bit more time, because I think this year, certainly as it was last year and the year before, but this year, more than ever, the self-driving and kind of concept cars sound like they're going to have a little bit more of a stage presence at CES.
Yeah, there's more automakers than last year going to be there. It's quickly becoming part auto show.
Exactly.
Yeah. And finally, PC and gaming and 8K TVs. I'm going to throw, this is all the home entertainment stuff, I guess. We'll obviously hear announcements from Intel, AMD, NVIDIA. We're going to see a lot of laptops with smaller and smaller bezels. We already started to get some announcements. The Dell Latitudes, which are their enterprise line, are beautiful. And they have this Windows Hello function that'll lock the screen when your face disappears and then unlock it as soon as you come back, which is really nice. So we're going to see a lot of stuff like that. We're going to see a lot of gaming stuff, PC gaming in particular, and 8K TVs. 8K TVs is going to be the silly thing. We're going to see very large 8K TVs. LG has already talked about their 88-inch OLED 8K TV. None of them are going to be practical. None of them, even if they have a price, are going to be a price that you can afford. And it's still a couple years off before 8K is even something where you could try to justify it for any reason. There's no content available. But we are nonetheless going to see a lot of very massive 8K TVs.
Yeah, you could do it because you can.
Right. Why not? They did it.
That's what CES is half about. We did it because we could.
I've been going to CES since 2000 and on and off. And it almost makes me nostalgic to finally be back with a new TV trend, right? For years, it was HD, and then it was 1080, and then it was 3D, and then it was 4K, and then it was 4K HDR. And
Last year, lots of modular TVs. Right, it could be a whole wall or just a small one.
Yeah. Was it Samsung that had that?
It was, yeah. But a few others.
This is the year of 8K, and it just makes me feel comfortable going into CES with a solid, silly television trend to look out for.
Well, yeah. And now all the 4K TVs will drop in price and we can all get on board 5 years later.
Exactly.
Hey, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on others and, I don't know, make some friends along the way. DailyTechNewsShow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook. We've got a group there, facebook.com/groups/DailyTechNewsShow.
We love your emails. And then sometimes we read them on the show, like this one.
Now, I don't remember Tesla ever having a CES presence. Who knows? But Raul was thinking a little bit about this because we've been talking about Elon Musk and Tesla and EV cars lately. Raul says, I'm no expert on Elon Muskology. That's clever, Raul. But it did seem to me that Mr. Musk is as much driven to make money as he is to create change. He sees something that needs changing. Electric cars, Raid via tunnel. All right. That's what Rolo said. Trips to Mars, stuff like that. And he says that there's an opportunity to make money while bringing about change. All this to say, more EV cars on the road, even if they're not Tesla, might please him. Of course, I may be wrong. Happy New Year to all, and congrats on the 5-year anniversary.
Thank you, Earl. I think he meant to write rapid rail via tunnel. It took
rapid
me a minute.
Rail. Well, I was like, maybe that's a term I'm not familiar with.
Yeah. But yeah. I think sometimes on this show I may come off as disliking Elon Musk or Tesla, and that is not true. I think Elon Musk does want to make the world a better place. I think sometimes the press is a little too laudatory of him, so I try to counterbalance that. But I got no problem with the man, and I love the company.
He definitely wants to make his mark and be considered a pioneer of whatever field he's in and remembered that way.
And many founders share with Elon Musk the idea that there is a need. He might not have woken up one day and been like, my desire is to change the auto industry. He may have observed the auto industry enough to say, you know what this needs? This needs a thing, and I'm going to be the one to do it.
That's kind of like the Boring Company, right? He was driving in traffic and said, you know what, this we need a tunnel. And then he went out.
Right. So. I'm going to make a product serve the market. All right, let's check in with Len Peralta, who has been busy scribbling, as he does, during this entire show. Len, what do you got?
Scribbling away, always, like I said at the top of the show, talking about CES on my first appearance of the new year. And this is no different. This particular one is called Drones, Phones, and Smart Homes. And it sort of covers everything. It's got the drones, it's got the Nest, it's got the smartphones, it's got the 5G, it's got everything. And
it's almost like got a Sideshow Bob look to this guy.
It's kind of a half-naked man who is yelling, wearing his VR helmet, just enjoying what's going to be happening at CES. Can't wait to see what comes out of it. It's always really exciting. And
is that a smart towel? You know what? Don't answer that. It's all right.
Yes, it is a smart towel. It's a Wi-Fi car. It's everything you could possibly imagine.
We didn't even talk about drones. There's going to be a million drones at CES. Yeah. So here's my challenge to everyone. Buy this right now from LenPeraltaStore.com. Take it to CES and get a vendor who actually does one of these products to sign it at every point that it is represented on this, and then send us a picture. If you complete the whole set, we'll do something really nice for you.
That'll be awesome. That's cool. Boy, you're really going crazy for the 5 years. I can't believe it's 5 years, honestly.
I know, man. We are really excited to be celebrating our 5-year anniversary. We've got all kinds of things planned, more to come. But right now, the big thing is if you stay with Patreon at one of the higher tiers for 3 months, you can get merchandise with Len's 5-year anniversary art, the 5-year anniversary art that Len did back on December 21st. You can get it as a sticker if you're at the co-executive producer or analyst level, as a poster at the advisor level, or a mug with that logo at the master level. And all you have to do is be at that level. So if you're already at that level, just stick there for 3 months as of January 2nd. Or if you change your tier, you just have to stick at that tier for 3 months. Check it out at patreon.com/DTNS/merch.
Exciting. If you've got feedback for us, I have an email address for you, and that is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. You can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
We'll see you Monday from Las Vegas Convention Center and CES 2019. Talk to you then. Woo-hoo.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.